tell me a little bit about the project and your research that you're doing.
Well, there's clouds in space floating around, particularly in within the galaxy. There's huge clouds that float around, and they're made up out of molecules. And there's lots of different kinds of clouds, but the ones that we're studying in particular are called diffuse clouds, because they're big and poofy, you know? And the way you study these clouds is if there's, you know, a star somewhere out there, and you're looking at it, and there's one of these clouds between you and the star, some of the light from the star gets absorbed by the molecules in the clouds. And these absorption features, you know, a lot of it is just normal stuff that you would expect to be out in space, like hydrogen and whatnot. But there's something like well over 300 unidentified features that are unidentified in these clouds. And they are very mysterious. People have been trying to figure out what has been causing them for something like 90 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So since like early 1900s,
right,
we've been unable to identify these.
Right.
So what separates these clouds from like nebulae?
Just that they're very sort of, they're big and kind of thin clouds.
Okay.
They're not like... like nebulae, like when you look at a nebula, you're seeing light reflected off of it because it's so dense that you don't actually usually see light coming through them. You see light bouncing off.
Yeah.
So these are a little different.
So what department are you working in?
Physics.
So you're a grad student?
Right.
Okay. And when did you start?
3 years ago I started. So I'm starting my fourth year now.
That would have been 2006, 7?
6.
Okay.
I'm bad with dates, personally.
That's alright. We got one. So, run me through the procedure and why you're using the SRC.
Oh, so, well, what we're trying to do is take some molecules, and so what we want to do is get the spectrum of a bunch of different molecules and see how they compare to the spectrum of these clouds and see if any of the features match up with the unidentified features in the clouds. So the problem is, since people have been working on this problem for so long, that the only things that are left that haven't been tried are hard to study. And in particular, we're studying large polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, which are these big molecules that have these hexagonal rings to them. Mm-hmm. And this ring structure is important because it's very stable. And the interstellar medium is sort of an extreme place. There's lots of X-rays and stuff and flying around. So any large molecule that was not very stable would be obliterated.
Yeah.
You know? So that's sort of the prime candidate for what's causing these features, because every small molecule that's easy to work with has been done.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's left. But the other side of the coin for being a very stable molecule is that here on Earth, they're very sooty. This is dirt, is what these molecules are. They're very difficult to get into the gas phase, and you know, out in space, they're going to be in the gas phase because it's space. But here on Earth, they form clumps. They're soot. You have to heat them up a lot to get them into the gas phase, right? You want to study these molecules when they're cold, because space is cold, right? So there's some things working against you. And it's important to, the reason why it's important to study them cold is because these large molecules, right? They're large, so they have a lot of different vibrational and rotational modes that they can go into if they are heated up. And so the spectrum between a room temperature molecule and a, you know, 100 Kelvin molecule is, you know, night and day. You wouldn't recognize it, you know? So the goal is to somehow take these molecules that start out as soot, heat them up so they go into the gas phase, cool them down, don't let them form clumps again, and don't let them stick to the wall of the of your vacuum chamber before you get a chance to shine your light on them. Mm-hmm. So we came up with this big stupid tube that that is supposed to do that, and the way it works is like a wind tunnel. The there's a little propeller that circulates a buffer gas of neon around like a racetrack, and that blows around and around and around.
What's the purpose of the neon?
Well, it's to cool the molecules. So there's a little pod that heats up that's full of the molecules, mm-hmm. and the molecules kind of leak out of this pod, and then when they come out, they're hot, but they get swept up in this flow of neon, and they collide with the neon atoms, and that cools them down.
Energy, yeah.
Right.
So the neon isn't going to contaminate your spectra.
Well, it's in there, but we, you know, the neon spectrum is very well understood.
So you recognize it, so yeah. You'll know that it's part of it.
Right. And we use like a neon lamp to calibrate our spectrometer anyway. Okay. So I mean, it's sort of
there. Yeah. Okay. So what light frequencies are you using?
We use the visible, the near ultraviolet and the near infrared, pretty much from 250 nanometers up to 1,000 nanometers.
And is that representative of what these clouds are subjected to in space from starlight?
No, they have a lot. There's a lot more. The interstellar spectrum is hugely broad, but this is where all of the unidentified features are, you know, between 400 and 800 nanometers. So we have that region plus, you know, bookends.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause we're really just looking for these features. Yeah.
Okay, so how about I run through the way I see your experiment, and you can just correct me if mm-hmm. I'm wrong. So we have the light source, and then you have your monochromator, which is going to separate the light into the frequencies that you want to be using.
Mm-hmm.
And then down your beamline and into your gas chamber where it's I forget the name of that molecule.
The polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. Yeah.
So the dirt molecule.
Right.
You shine your light on them, and assuming everything's going correctly, they're going to give off a spectra that you can then analyze and compare to our known database of elements.
Well, that's pretty close. We do it differently. Rather than most of the beam lines that have the monochromator built into the beam line, we made our own that's outside. So we just shine the full synchrotron continuum through our tube, and then it bounces back and forth inside the tube, you know, any number of times, and then we take the light out, and then we put it into the monochromator after it's already gone through the gas sample.
Okay.
And because we don't just do one wavelength at a time, we have this spectrograph that's very broad band and can see like half the visible in one picture.
Okay.
Yeah, and
yeah.
It you know, it smears it all out, and so we have good resolution, very broad spectral coverage all at once. So because this experiment is tricky and we're working with very small amounts of this sample, we don't want to, you know, it would take a really long time and be very expensive to go through one wavelength at a time.
So your analysis afterward will weed out the frequencies that you didn't want to look at. You'll be able to just see it for the selected frequencies that you told me about.
Right, right.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we... yeah, and only the spectrometer can only look at, you know, a certain chunk at a time, so it can't even look at this.
Okay.
It looks like from 500 to 800 at once, and mm-hmm. then you can go through and look at any wavelength you want once you've collected all the data.
So as we all know, science does not just work perfectly.
No.
So
no.
What are some of the troubleshoots that have come across?
Oh boy, there's been all sorts of crazy problems. The one particular problem is getting the gas to circulate. You have to have this little propeller in there that blows the stuff around.
Mm-hmm.
But to get the gas going around at the speed we want, the propeller has to rotate at like 5,000 revolutions per minute in a vacuum at 100 Kelvin, which is impossible. So we had to figure out a way to make it possible, which took a long time and a lot of engineering and machining mm-hmm. and... It was, you know, a lot of weird materials went into it. But eventually, it works pretty well now. And it, you know, blows around as fast as we want and everything. But it took, you know, months of horrible screeching noises and, you know, lots of cussing and stomping around and to make it work. All sorts of other problems... but the key problem that we have is that the molecules, what's supposed to happen is that as they come out of the pod, they get swept up and they're just blown away into the path of the light beam. But what happens is they don't come out quite fast enough, and so the molecules, as they're coming out of the pod, they stick back together again as they cool off. Sort of like when you're boiling water in a teapot and the steam is coming out of the spout. It's coming out, you can see the steam, and since you can see the steam, that means it's not water vapor, it's water droplets.
Mm-hmm.
And so the water is recondensing after it leaves the teapot.
Yeah.
And is back to room temperature. So we have the exact same problem as they're coming out of the pod in the gas phase, but then they're forming little clumps, which is not what we wanted to study, and we can't seem to figure out a way to get them to come out properly.
Is anyone else working on something like this?
Not quite like this. The typical way that other groups are studying these same molecules is with a laser-based technique, and they, you know, they scan through one molecule at a time. It takes them a lot longer, and what they do is they don't have they have a pulse of these molecules that sprays out, and when they spray out, they're shooting out like this. They don't have time to sort of wander around and stick back together like they do in our system. So they don't have the same clustering problems that we do, but they have a much slower experiment. So the whole idea of our experiment was to be to do a whole lot of molecules really quickly, and sort of be able to come up with a database of sort of near matches and maybes, and then go in more carefully with one of these more sensitive, more precise laser experiments, and really make a more firm identification. But you wanted to rule out things that were not going to work, because it takes so long to do these laser experiments. You don't want to waste 6 months on a molecule that you could have ruled out in 2 days with this system.
So how did you come up with your list of molecules to test?
Well, we started with a couple molecules that had already been done with the laser-based experiment, just so we would have something to compare to. Mm-hmm. And that was our first couple of molecules. And then I went through and saw which molecules were available cheap, weren't too toxic, and had a high enough vapor pressure that they would be easy to work with, easy to vaporize. And that was the next three or four. And then once we did the first four or five molecules and got things working, we would ask someone else which molecules they wanted us to do.
Okay.
But we never really got it that far off the ground yet.
Alright. So, now comes the two-part question.
Yeah.
Why?
Why what?
Why are you studying this? Both philosophically and practically speaking.
Well, I mean, it's sort of these, if you think about, looking, there are some... The total number of molecular species that have been identified in space, total, any size, anywhere, is 100.
Mm-hmm.
And there are over 300 of these unidentified features in these clouds. And they're...
Mark Stockett, please dial 634. Mark,
do you have a phone in here?
634.